Roxbury. Community radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
WIOX is supported by Peekamoose Restaurant and Tap Room on Route 28 in Big Indian, inviting you to a Halloween celebration Friday, October 25th, featuring a costume contest, prizes, a haunted photo booth, tarot card reader, a DJ and dancing, and cocktails and bar food. Friday night, October 25th, from 8 to midnight. Reservations and information at peekamooserestaurant.com or 845-254-6500.
To Health Center in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, and national and international issues on the health of individuals, families, and communities in our Catskill region. And it's very nice to be back after being away for 3 weeks. Some rest in there, but a lot of work, and I came back a little bit fried, but I'm feeling better today. It's a glorious day out there in the Catskill Mountains with those leaves turning and falling off the tree. That's the sad part. But I'm delighted today to have with me in the studio Karen Driscoll, who is a registered nurse who we were on the air together a year ago, right?
Yes.
Karen was a graduate student, and you graduated, yay, from SUNY Delhi. You graduated when?
I walked in May, and I officially graduated in July.
Great.
So, yes.
And you were a star student.
Oh,
and
thank you.
And you did great work. And so she
It was easy. It was a wonderful program. So, you know, I couldn't have been here without all of the amazing educators that I encountered at SUNY Delhi.
Yeah, they actually have a really, I have to say, I'm not a fan of online education, but they do a really good job of it, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is at the graduate level, the undergraduate, the associate degree program, at least the associate degree program, you have to be there in person.
Right.
But then you can get a baccalaureate degree online
Correct.
From them. Right.
Correct.
And now this master's. And there's word that they're looking at doing a family nurse practitioner program.
Kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Good. We need that up
we
here.
We do. Okay. We do. Very much do. So it's nice to have you back. But just to refresh listeners, Karen, as part of her graduate studies, was working with what was then the Eastern Delaware County Coalition on Substance Abuse Prevention and Treatment, that very long name, that we've now changed to the Catskill Addiction Council.
Yeah.
And so we were doing a lot of education around substance use and prevention.
And disconnected youth.
Yes.
And our summit that we held in January, and we'll have another in January of 2020.
Yes. We're going to be reporting back to the community on what we've accomplished in this past year and what we need to do to move forward and become a better recovery-friendly community.
Right.
So, yeah, we got a lot of planning and work to do.
And
plug our social media.
Oh, yes. So if you would like to look up the Catskill Addiction Coalition, we do have a website, and I don't have the address right in front of me, but if you are on social media, you can look us up on Facebook under Catskill Addiction Coalition or on Instagram or Twitter, same name, Catskill Addiction Coalition, on both Twitter and Instagram. and we're pretty active on there. You can
because of Karen.
Well, it's fun. So, and you can find our website on our website address on any of those social media sites, and you can interact with me. And if you think there's anything we need to add or discuss, please feel free to contact me, and I'll post it there for you.
How would they contact you?
Contact me through the social media sites. Right. You just direct message me, and I'll get right back to you.
Great. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It's great work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So today on Health Center in the Catskills, we're going to talk about a new report from the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. And actually, the report was just released today at 11 o'clock. And the report is about how the healthcare system can address what's called social needs of patients. And these are things like housing, access to healthy foods, violence in a community, trauma. It could be education and jobs. These are social determinants of health that affect the health of people. And they actually affect it so much that it has resulted in increased healthcare costs, greater use of emergency rooms, hospitalizations, et cetera. And our healthcare system hasn't been very attuned to addressing these social needs at all. But now we're realizing we could really do a better job if we did. So I'm going to be talking with, or Karen and I will be talking with, Robin Golden, who's a social worker and director of the Center for Health and Social Integration at Rush University Medical Center, and she's one of the leading social workers in the nation. So we're going to be talking about that report and why it's something the public should care about, and certainly why healthcare professionals and healthcare administrators should care about it. But first, let's do Health Center news. So first up, I've been reporting on the increasing number of hospitalizations and deaths from vaping over these past months, but there have now been reports, and I reported on this the last time I was on the air, out of Wisconsin and Illinois, of deaths from vaping, as well as the hospitalizations. Well, now we have over 530 cases of people who are hospitalized with lung injuries reported from 38 states and one U.S. territory, and at least seven deaths have been confirmed in six states. This has become such an issue that the CDC is really doing a deep dive into who are the people affected and what do we know about them. And the CDC has received complete sex and age data on 373 of 530 cases that had been reported to it a few days ago. Two-thirds of the cases are people between the ages of 18 and 34 years of age. Now, almost one in five, 16% of the cases are people under the age of 18, and 17%, almost one in five, are 35 years of age or older. So mostly people between the ages of 18 and 34, but we really need to pay attention to the young people in our communities who are vaping because it's cool, and we need to make it uncool because it is dangerous to their health. All the reported cases have a history of using an e-cigarette product or vaping. And most of the patients reported a history of using e-cigarette products containing THC. So you can get these pods that have THC in them, and which is the active ingredient in marijuana. Mm-hmm. And many people are evidently getting these pods off the streets. Many patients are reporting using the THC and nicotine, but there are some people who only report using nicotine in the vaping. Now, the problem has become so serious that Walmart has ended sales of e-cigarettes. Walmart has ended the sale of e-cigarettes. And states are banning the use of e-cigarettes with flavors in them because it's a marketing strategy targeting young people. And that should be outlawed. And in some cities and some states, they are doing that. And The CDC has issued a number of recommendations, and I want to share these with you. And this was just from last week. First, consider refraining from using e-cigarettes or vaping products. If you have recently used an e-cigarette or vaping product and you have symptoms like those reported in the outbreak, see a healthcare provider. Now, what are those symptoms? Well, it's cough, shortness of breath, or chest pain, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, fatigue, fever, or abdominal pain. Now, some patients have reported that their symptoms developed over a few days, while others have reported their symptoms developed over several weeks. So the picture is varying a little bit. A lung infection does not appear to be causing the symptoms. So it's not an infection, it's other damage that's being done to your body and your lungs in particular. Now, if you use e-cigarettes or vaping products, or if you know someone who does, please share this with them. The CDC has these recommendations. Anyone who uses an e-cigarette or vaping product should not buy these products off the street. Now, that includes the equipment. It includes the pods with THC or CBD oils. And they should not modify or add any substances to these products that are not intended by the manufacturer. And again, see a healthcare provider right away if you have any kinds of symptoms. Now, if you're someone, an adult, who uses these cigarettes because you have quit cigarette smoking, they recommend do not return to smoking cigarettes. Cigarettes are also harmful to you, and we really don't want people going back to smoking cigarettes. So there are other things you can do. You can, one, carefully monitor yourself for any symptoms from the use of the e-cigarettes. But if you're trying to quit smoking or quit using e-cigarettes, you can contact your healthcare provider and tell them you want help. And there are things that they can do. There are evidence-based treatments available, including counseling and FDA-approved medication. That's medications approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Now, these approved medications include nicotine patches, gum, and lozenges that replace the nicotine that you were getting in your cigarette or the e-cigarette. But they have their own adverse effects in people with certain health conditions. So you want to talk to your healthcare provider about your using any of these products. The FDA has approved 2 smoking cessation products that do not contain nicotine. They are Chantix and Zyban. Now, the Zyban is bupropion. Both are available in tablet form and by prescription only. So that really helps to wean you off of the nicotine. So the other thing I think you can do is just develop a plan for how you're going to quit, how you're going to taper, either quit outright or taper your use of e-cigarettes and tobacco products. Now, if you're concerned about your health after using an e-cigarette product, contact your healthcare provider, or you can also call your local poison control center at 1-800-222-1222. That's 1-800-222-1222. Now, that's the poison control center to report it. Next on Health Center in the News, last week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi unveiled legislation that would give the federal government sweeping new authority to regulate and lower the cost of prescription drugs. And we certainly need efforts to lower the cost of these drugs. It's getting quite outrageous. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell declared the bill dead on arrival in the Senate and told Politico it amounts to, quote, socialist price controls. But a bipartisan bill in the Senate was introduced in July. Senate Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, and Ron Wyden, Democrat from Oregon, introduced the Prescription Drug Pricing Reduction Act of 2019. Now, this would make changes to Medicare that would limit out-of-pocket expenses for beneficiaries in 2022. It would also penalize pharmaceutical companies if the price of their drugs rise faster than inflation. Now, I'm hoping at a future Health Cetera program to actually have somebody on to talk with you about the prescription drug issue and what some of the options are for lowering the cost of prescription drugs. And then, finally, on Health Cetera in the Catskills, we've got a local issue that we want to bring to your attention that concerns veterans in Delaware County. And Karen is going to introduce our next guest to our listeners.
All right, so.
Had to get her in the studio.
Yeah, had to get her
in. She didn't come from far.
How do you know?
So we wanted to talk about the Delaware County Veteran Services, which is going to be hosting what is called the Veterans Stand Down on Wednesday, November 6th from 10 to 2 at the Catskills Veteran Outreach Center in Stamford. So here to talk with us today about this event is Jane Piasek.
Piasek.
Close. Thank you. I'm sorry. Oh, let me get that right. There we go.
There we go.
And you're a public health nurse with Delaware County Public Health, right?
Yes.
And are you bringing anyone else to speak with you today? Jason?
The gentleman that I was going to bring is actually up in Utica.
Oh, okay.
At the center that operates the Delaware County Center in Stamford, Connecticut.
Okay.
So we'll back up. But yeah, so why am I talking about a veteran stand down when I'm not a veteran?
Yeah.
Let's just start there. But it all started for me almost a year ago when I started looking at what population are we not aware enough of in Delaware County. Mm-hmm. And through my work at the Delaware County Health Department, one of the programs I work in is promoting vaccines for children and adults. And so when I started thinking about populations in Delaware County that we haven't really focused on, veterans came to mind. Mm-hmm. So I started doing my research and kind of a deep dive into What do we do for veterans? Where do they go for care and help? And flu season's going to be coming up, and where do you go get a flu shot? I know veterans go to the VA clinic up in Albany to get a lot of their medical care on one side of the county, and on the other side you have a clinic out in the, I believe, the Bainbridge area. We don't have any veterans medical clinics in our county.
Right. They have to travel a long ways.
They have to travel a long ways. There are a certain number of veterans that don't require, they went into private care and jobs after they left the military. So maybe they don't need the military benefits. But for those that do and have them, I became aware that you have to go out of the county, depending on your insurance or lack thereof, to get assistance. So as I was talking with Veterans Affairs people at the state level, and we have our own Veterans Affairs County Director, Charlie Piper, he was extremely helpful in getting me to understand the way things work now. And through the course of multiple conversations and going around the county and talking to veterans and wanting to focus on maybe there's a way for me to work with the Veterans Affairs people to effectuate the goal of getting the word out about the importance of flu shots for veterans, and particularly that population with their medical exposures and history.
Sure.
And so Charlie Piper and I started talking, and I started talking with others about the stand down concept, which
Yeah,
a lot of veterans don't even know what that is.
Yeah,
so it's not just that the general public doesn't know. And I had only heard about it, as I mentioned to you earlier, years ago in San Diego when they put on a stand down for homeless. It started as an event for homeless veterans that came out of the Vietnam War, where they it took people off the front lines, took the veteran combat troops off the front lines, and gave them a respite in a safe place where you could get free meals and a shower and sleep in a bed and get your medical needs taken care of. And who knew that the stand down concept would carry on and still does today, where there are stand downs in multiple states and in New York in multiple counties. And after talking to Charlie, I found out that we've never done one in Delaware County. So this is a first. So I'll go back to, where is it being held and when is it being held and what will happen?
Sure.
This is an event for veterans. It is not just for homeless veterans. It's for veterans in need, general veteran assistance. So there will be Veterans Affairs people at this event. There will be benefit counselors. Walgreens has taken over the Rite Aid pharmacy in Stamford, so they're going to come and give flu shots at this event that's happening on November 6th.
And those are free?
They're free if you have a certain veterans eligibility. But actually, what they've told me, I've talked to the pharmacist who's going to do this, they'll be able to give anybody a flu shot if you have your insurance card with you. It won't be limited. If they're coming with a guest or family member, they're open to giving flu shots. But this particular event is, yes, it's being targeted for veterans. I have a couple of people coming who are going to give free haircuts, eye vision screenings, working with the SUNY Delhi School of Nursing to come and do blood pressure checks. And so, in addition to resources on addiction and prevention and suicide and all that stuff, we're hoping to dress it up a little bit. And I know Charlie is working with the veterans people in Albany to get some of the free military surplus items that can be given out. So I went to the stand down in Saugerties on August 9th. It was quite a remarkable event. And so this is a small version. It's the first one ever. And I think the hope is that if we can get this to work right, maybe there'll be more of them. So this event, for people who are local and maybe know Stamford, New York, I have to say that because I came from Stamford, Connecticut and I get mixed up sometimes. But Stamford, New York, right on Main Street, 56 Main Street, what used to be the Delaware Inn. So some people might know it as that. That is a satellite facility of an organization out of Utica. It's called, in Stamford, it's the Catskill Veterans Outreach Center. Interestingly enough, it's a transitional housing. They have rooms there for veterans. So our homeless veteran population, not just Delaware County, but they now have a place where they can go and be transitioned into permanent housing and get the resources and the support that they need. So this facility, while it's a resource center, it's also a place for people to come and live and stay temporarily. It's not permanent housing.
It's very nice.
So the Catskill Veterans Outreach Center is there. There's people there Monday through Friday. Anybody can walk in. You can get information. You get services. So even though this is a one-time event there, that center stays open.
Sure.
To be a resource for people. So it's 56 Main Street, Stamford, New York, on Wednesday, November 6th, from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. All veterans are welcome, not just Delaware County. So
including
it'll
women,
be,
right? Women
and
veterans.
Women, yes.
And their families.
Yes.
And their families can come with them, sure.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that, you know, the general public, I'm sure maybe people might be wandering in, but it is a veterans event and as such.
I was curious, being that I don't live in Delaware County myself, now how many veterans do you think that we actually have here in Delaware County?
I've heard various numbers. I think at the top end, I've heard like 3,000, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
What's our total population? 46,000, 47,000. So I can't verify it with any particular numbers because that information is, you know, proprietary to the veterans system, and I'm not really in the in crowd.
But there's
there.
Quite a few of them here. And then we were discussing just a little bit ago one of the major challenges for veterans here in our area is that if they need medical attention, they need to go very far away. And, mm-hmm. they, and you and I were talking prior to the radio program that there's a bus that they have to take, and it goes all the way up to Albany.
Yeah, the county has some vans, and they have pickup points around the county at certain times. So if you can get to the pickup point, then you mm-hmm. can get on the bus and go up and see your healthcare provider, mm-hmm. you know, at the Albany Clinic. And then the bus comes back. It leaves at some point in the afternoon. And so it's quite, that's an hour and a half ride,
mm-hmm.
you know, for some people just to get there.
Yeah.
Then you have your appointments and then you've got to ride back and then get dropped off. And that's a long day. So my hope is, at least in terms of my public health role, which is getting flu shots for people, Walgreens, I think we need to get the word out, because all these, well, we have four Rite Aids that are converting to Walgreens pharmacies mm. in Delaware County that will be able to give shots to veterans. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about the Walgreens contract is that because they have a contract with the VA, those flu shots that you get end up in your VA medical record.
Uh-huh.
So they have that data exchange, which I think is another important piece.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm all for that.
Well, and I just as an aside, Walgreens is aggressively trying to build out healthcare services within its stores
mm-hmm.
to the point that they are, I believe, funding their own employees to go back and become healthcare workers.
Wow.
So incredible. They're seeing this as an opportunity here to really get into
expand.
The space of at least an urgent care kind of situation.
Well, I'm aware that CVS has done that in certain
yep.
places around
yep.
the country. They have my son who's in Hawaii goes to their Minute Clinics when he didn't have,
yep.
he had New York health insurance and he couldn't get a primary care doctor out there, but he could go to a CVS Minute Clinic would
yep.
be covered
yep.
under his plan. So it was interesting to find yep. out that, yeah. And I think Walmart might be looking to do that too, if I'm not mistaken, but I couldn't say.
So it's really
hard to keep up with all this.
It is. So it's really an effort for Delaware County to pay attention to its veterans in a new way.
And to say thank you mm-hmm. in a meaningful way, and hope that this particular event will get veterans to meet other veterans and make those connections and find out what resources are available, because
right.
there's a lot of resources in Delaware County that veterans can take advantage of.
But you're trying to build more, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were surprised yes. that Delaware County had no businesses participating
oh.
in a...
So there's a new...
Program.
Yeah, there's so our Delaware County head of the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, Ray Pucci, is working on reinvigorating a program, a veteran discount program called Honoring Our Heroes. And he has applications available so that merchants can sign up to become a veteran-friendly business and offer discounts. And so veterans ultimately would be able to go online and see what businesses are enrolled and what discounts they have, and you know, have a placard in the window that says they're, you know, veterans are welcome here. And so
great.
That's new, because I think it was a program that kind of fell by the wayside and wasn't very active. So
any business owner who's listening who might want to be part of this discount program should contact Ray Pucci.
So the business owners who wish to partner, the phone number is call the chamber at 607-746-2281.
One more time.
607-746-2281. If anybody has questions about the Veterans Stand Down,
mm-hmm.
they can contact Charlie Piper, the Delaware County Veterans Services officer, at 607-832-5345. I'll give that again
mm-hmm.
for the Veterans Stand Down on November 6th, 607-832-5345. Charlie will be on the air talking about that event October 22nd on Talk of the Town with Arnie Schwartz.
Great.
I believe they've booked a time,
great.
So they'll be able to give
great.
A full half hour to that.
And again, the Stand Down is what day and what
November
time and where?
November 6th. It's the Wednesday from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. It's at the Catskill Veterans Outreach Center, 56 Main Street in Stamford, New York.
Great.
All veterans, please come.
And volunteers, anybody?
And volunteers,
right?
You can contact that 607-832-5345. If you'd like to volunteer, help set up the day before, or help the day of. So
great.
I know that there are a lot of businesses that are donating services.
You're listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. I'm Diana Mason, the host of the program, and I am here with co-host Karen Driscoll, another registered nurse on this program. Thanks so much for joining me today, Karen.
It's great to be here again.
Well, today at 11 o'clock, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine released a new report titled Integrating Social Care into the Delivery of Healthcare. And here to join me in this discussion of the report is Robin Golden, a professor in the College of Health Sciences at Rush University and Associate Vice President of Population Health and Aging at the university's Medical Center. She also directs Rush's Center for Health and Social Integration. Now, Robin and I were members of the committee that produced this report, so for transparency's sake, I was a member of that committee too. Welcome, Robin, to Health Center in the Catskills.
Thank you, Diane and Karen.
Hey, you did
and
great.
And the weather here, I'm in Washington, the weather here is beautiful as well.
Oh, good. And you did a great job on the webinar this morning. I understand they said at the end there were about 2,000 people who were listening.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And about 90 questions.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of attention, and we were on the Hill yesterday. There was a lot going on, there is, but we were able to meet with various committees to talk about the report and try to get the staffers there and the members interested in these critical issues around healthcare. So I think we had some impact.
Good.
We'll see what happens.
So, that's very interesting.
We missed you, though.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. Couldn't be there. So that will lead me to another question a little bit later on in this interview. But let's talk a little bit about what are we talking about with social needs? Why do we have to be talking about the social needs of people? What are they?
Sure. There are things such as housing, food, transportation, utility issues. There also has to do with mental health issues, around loneliness, those sorts of things that are being talked about much more lately. So our focus was mostly around housing, food, and transportation in the report, but I don't want to forget all the things that affect people's health and well-being.
Yeah, So why should we be concerned about this in terms of health care?
Sure. Well, we put a lot of money into health care in this country with not such great outcomes. And everyone's been scratching their head about that for a long time. But when you see that health outcomes in other countries being higher than ours, the one correlation to that, the main correlation, is they put more money into social care, such as, you know, helping people with these factors that I just mentioned, whether or not it's identifying them, assessing them, addressing them through a longer relationship, care managers that may wrap around primary care, wrap around the hospital to help people with their social needs, all of the above are things that may go on in other countries and get paid for more than it happens in our country.
Yeah. And you know, as a nurse, I can remember, and Karen may, there may be other examples you know of, but a sort of classic one was the patient who you don't know is homeless, or maybe they are homeless, but it's not your job to address that. But they are diagnosed with diabetes, and they have to take insulin, and the insulin has to be refrigerated. It's not going to happen. And so they're going to be right back to the emergency room.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had one of our primary care docs at Rush University Medical Center, who's really a doc that gets this, And he is a physician who basically said he had been seeing a patient for 6 years and had no idea that he was near homeless, couch surfing, and or out on the street at times, until he asked more directly in a more standardized way some questions. And he was just in shock because, of course, he felt, and he does have such a good relationship with his patients, yet they are ashamed or other things are getting in the way of mentioning those kinds of things in a more of a setting that's focused on your physical health. So another key reason to integrate.
And you at Rush have been doing some things with housing and even with food, I believe.
Yes, we have. And we have some good-looking data around the housing. I mean, to me, it should all be just about putting people in housing it with wraparound services, but, you know, you have to have some evidence that it's working in order to get the people that write the checks to pay for it, and we really have shown some reduction in unnecessary emergency room visits, unnecessary hospitalizations, and unnecessarily coming back to the hospital, which often happens with folks that we're talking about.
Yeah. And so why isn't this routinely built into the healthcare system?
For some reason, I think that, you know, we have developed over the years a very medical model of healthcare and have barely expanded to the team to include a physician and nurse sometimes. As you too well know, that sometimes we all get left out of the equation.
Yeah.
But what's really frustrating is that we know teams make a difference, and that if we can better articulate everybody's role on the team, it would be really important. I think people see this as costing more as opposed to being budget neutral or bringing in savings later on. And I think when they hear the word team or they hear another professional's name or role, they get nervous that they see dollar signs rising as opposed to lowering. And I think that's part of it. I think we just see people as their diagnosis very often and not in a more holistic way to understand what's going on. They're not just, as you described, a diabetic. There's much more going on with people, and we have to take a moment to get to know who they are and what matters to them, what makes them tick, in order to really help them, you know, gain greater health if possible. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that, why you think it's been missing as well?
Well, I think the report highlights some other factors that directly impinge upon that monetary factor, and that is how care is paid for, that you're paid
Absolutely.
By the procedure. You're not necessarily, although that's changing. It's people refer.
Well, and that's why I think we're talking about this more,
yeah.
because it is changing from more of that procedure or volume way, how many heads in beds in a hospital, those sorts of things, to more value, what the outcomes are going to be. So maybe there's greater attention because of that. We hope so. But we're still going to live in a world with a little of both payment structures.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure everybody sees the importance of this, and regardless of how one's paid, the importance of allowing social care into the mix in a way with equity or parity with more medical focus.
So for people who are listening, this payment issue is a big one, and the example that I like to use is that if you are paid for every procedure you do to me, you're going to do a lot of procedures. Admitting me to the hospital will be a good thing. The hospital's going to make money. If I come to and use your emergency room, they're going to make a lot of money. If, however, that the health system that this hospital is in is paid a flat fee for anything I need to keep healthy or for my health per month, then it's in the hospital's best interest to keep me out of the hospital. And yet some hospitals would probably just ignore me. But with what you said, Robin, about really looking at what are the outcomes you have, if a hospital has to show that they are producing better outcomes, then it behooves them to look at how to do that in a preventive way. As we say, moving upstream, how to prevent the health problem from occurring in the first place. I like to use the example that Nurse Eileen Sullivan Marks shared with me. She was the director of a program called LIFE, Living Independent for Elders, which I'm sure you know is a geriatric person. And she said that, so it was about keeping elderly people out of nursing homes. And she said that they got paid a per member per month fee to keep them, do all their health care. And they had one woman who was going to the emergency room very often in a very hot summer. And what they decided to do, a deep dive on her and figure out what's going on here, because it was costing them so much. And so they discovered she had these respiratory problems, which is why she was going into the emergency room. She was in a housing complex with no air conditioning.
No air conditioning.
So they paid under $200 probably for an air conditioner, and she no longer went to the emergency room. Now, that's an example of how just something as simple as buying an air conditioning could make a huge difference in someone's health and utilization of health services. But heretofore, health systems wouldn't pay for that air conditioner,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it's interesting, Diana. That's where the social service world, where I spent most of my career, I gave authority, or, you know, was kind of the okay for a lot of my social work staff, care management staff, to go buy that air conditioner.
Wow, but good because, for you.
Because they saw that, and they saw that that was happening. Yeah, that's a great example of what you're talking about. And I think what's important for some of your listeners is that some of the Medicare Advantage plans, which some of your listeners may be in, has the opportunity now to pay for something like that air conditioner. And people should be aware of that. They have a supplemental benefit or that's a little beyond what's different, and it's not necessarily they're going to be spending more on you, but that they can utilize the money differently for more of those environmental needs or functional needs that people may have in terms of care at home. Each one is going to play out a little differently, but I think consumers need to know what they should ask for if they're in one of those plans, and that they can advocate for themselves or they can ask for someone else to advocate on their behalf.
So, Robin, this report really calls for all members of the healthcare team and administrators
Absolutely.
To be really paying attention to the social needs of patients. So, but look, it is the social workers who are the experts in this. And so they, you know, we're not doing the job we need to do, but there are a lot of challenges to social workers being able to do the work. Even with this new report, if the whole healthcare team got on board and people were assessing people for social needs, you know, a physician, a nurse at the bedside are probably only going to have time to refer to the social worker. What are some of the challenges that really stand in the way of our health system using social workers to the best that we can?
Mm-hmm. I think they don't realize the breadth and depth of what they can do. I think when they do know social work, sometimes it's just thinking of them as plugging in a resource, not developing a relationship, helping someone get comfortable with all of their health changes, or helping somebody work through the difficulties of working through a system, somebody to help folks with depression or anxiety, all of those things that I think social work is a bit misunderstood. And the more we can be clear what we're doing and call ourselves social workers and help people that we're serving to understand our value and the people around us to understand our value, I think the easier it will be. Now, what happens is that so often the social work component doesn't get paid for beyond the hospital inpatient setting, and that becomes trickier than to say to people, particularly older people, you know, Medicare pays for all these things for you, but it's not going to pay for this social worker to help you help coordinate your care, help you get through this tough time. And if they say that, you know, if Medicare gives that message to folks, then that message also says this service is not as important if we're not paying for it. So it really gets in the way of people feeling comfortable with social work and social work services because somehow they maybe haven't, they don't look as legitimized or as credible because the payment is not occurring. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Karen's sitting here nodding. You see this in the hospital.
Yes, and I'm learning, you know, reading this report. Just, it was extremely eye-opening to me as, you know, as a hospital-based nurse, as I was talking to you earlier about just, you know, how I view patients and patient care is very much an acute care model. And then I'm learning beyond that, what happens outside of the hospital is extremely important for nurses at the bedside to know. Because I do see these patients return, even though I work in oncology care, Robin, as you were, you and Diana were talking about, you know, those patients that, you know, they're diabetic and the physician that you knew did not know that that particular patient of his was basically homeless and he had been treating him for 6 years. We see the same issue as a bedside nurse. We see repeat patients coming in, you know, patients that are not, why are they not taking their oral chemotherapy medications? Because they can't afford them. They're not, it's not that they're not compliant.
I know.
Then they're so, returning. So it's a, this is a real huge learning experience for me, and I'm trying to pass this on to my coworkers and peers as well, that we need to think beyond what's happening here at the bedside in our hospital-based facility.
Yeah. It's so easy to wag our fingers at folks and say, oh, you're not listening to us as healthcare providers, when we're just clueless as what, you know, what goes on in their lives and how maybe the biggest issue is just figuring out how to get food on their table. Mm-hmm. And if we don't look at that in kind of a Maslow's hierarchy way, what comes first, we're always going to be missing the mark. So you're right on, Karen. And you know, our nurses are taking on this in our inpatient setting at Rush, and a lot of our examples in the report say the same. And it's very interesting. They know when to hand off to the social worker, and the social worker is there to do that. But the nurses are have embraced this, and they're finding that 30% of the people they're screening, no matter who or how they look or seem or what address they live in, 30% have needs and unmet needs. And so we're seeing not only that same 30% in the emergency department and that same 30% in primary care, which surprised me that in all those settings it would be the same. Yeah. So, you know, we're uncovering something that's there that we know is there intellectually, and it's not just good enough to uncover somebody's needs. You can't, you know, do that and then leave them to sit with the needs themselves. You have to help them solve for those. And, you know, how do we problem solve with them?
And I might point out the report does call for better collaboration, partnering between the healthcare system and the social service sector. And that's a really important piece. And it calls on healthcare administrators to be more attentive to this and look at the systems of care that are set up and how even in terms of electronic health record and other kinds of technologies that can help in this. But why, Robin, should the public care about this report?
Well, if I was sitting in my home and I was older and I needed some help with bathing and some things around my house, and I had somebody coming, a direct care worker, a caregiver, whatever you want to call them, coming to my house regularly to provide that for me, they know me very well. And some physician who I see once every 3 months doesn't know me as well as that person. So somehow they need to be communicating. We need, that physician needs to hear what that in-home worker has sees as how I'm doing, and I hopefully would want that. And that physician needs to share what his or her perspective is on how I'm doing, on the future, what might help, all those sorts of things. And until we create that bidirectional communication from the health institution to the community-based organization or people in the community doing this work, we're always going to fall short of more continuity and more holistic care.
I also advise my friends and family members that when you are going into a hospital, that you ask if you have any concerns at all about being discharged and transitioning back to home or to anywhere else, that you ask right away to speak with a social worker. I think my husband was hospitalized several years ago, and I expected discharge planning to be happening right away, and I had to ask for it 4 days into a week-long hospitalization.
Mm.
And that shouldn't have happened. That was not that
no.
system failed. But I think the point of this is that the social worker is key to being able to help you transition from that hospitalization,
mm-hmm.
connect with resources, et cetera. And sometimes I know you use nurses as case managers and
yep.
care managers.
Absolutely.
And so they're positioned to do that as well. And some hospital systems use both. But
I hope a report like this, Diana,
yeah.
will, if some of the reason your husband didn't see that social worker till you were practically walking out the door,
yeah.
that may be because they're overburdened and under-resourced.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully a report like this will,
Good.
You know, affect that as well.
Good. And just very quickly, when you were on the Hill, we know that on Friday, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services may be finalizing a rule that would actually pay social workers less.
It's quite unbelievable that this, we found this out the minute we got off the Hill. Yes, but it's exciting because I'm going back tomorrow,
Good.
So this is high on the mark. But it is so ironic, isn't it, as one door opens and we're moving forward
yes.
and progressing, another
yes.
one is cutting it
yeah.
down a bit. So
yeah.
who knows and why yeah. people make decisions. But it's exciting. We're going to be meeting with both of our senators from Illinois tomorrow, and hopefully we'll get them on the stick to challenge this a bit.
Great. And for anyone who's interested in reading the report, and the name of the report is Integrating Social Care into the Delivery of Healthcare. If you Google the NASEM, that stands for the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, if you Google that, and Integrating Social Care, you will find that report online, and it's free. You can download it for free. It's long, but there's an executive summary that's lays out what the issues are mm-hmm. and the recommendations. So I want to thank Robin Golden. It was great to work with you on this committee.
Oh, incredible.
You did fabulous work.
Karen must love working with you, Diana.
Yes, I do.
Robin Golden.
Thank you so much, and I'll speak to you soon.
All
and
right.
Let's keep this message going.
Yeah,
everyone's listening.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you so much for
Take
what
care.
You do.
That
was
thank
Robin.
You.
Robin Golden, professor in the College of Health Sciences at Rush University and associate vice president of Population Health and Aging at the university's medical center. So that I really appreciated her coming on today. And I really appreciate Karen Driscoll being in the studio today.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
thanks for inviting me.
Great to have you back. I'm Diana Mason. You've been listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.